Hey, all you growers out there, Jordan River here. Thank you for tuning in to GrowCast today. Real quick, I gotta tell you, membership is closing in 2 days for mygrowpass.com. That's right, our membership GrowPass, where you can get incredible discounts, dozens of discounts, like 20% off of soil, 25% off of nutrients and pest control, and all these amazing discounts, all the extra podcast episodes and the archived GrowCast, resources, AMAs, live streams. It's time to get in, guys. You don't want to be left out in the cold. We're closing in 2 days. Go to mygrowpass.com, get yourself one now before it's too late. This is the last time I'm going to warn you. We're having so much fun over there, so I just want to invite you along. And like I said, special congratulations to the winner, Nicholas, of the $2,000 Grow Prize Pack, everybody, at mygrowpass.com. Get it today. What do we have today? We have Dr. Coco on the line doing this FAQ series. And Dr. Coco is so knowledgeable and in-depth that we get through a couple of questions every episode. So this is going to be going for a while. And today's episode is really, really awesome. I always learn something new with Dr. Coco, and I know you're going to love everything that we have to discuss today. Before we get started, though, let's give some love to our partner, Rooted Life CBD, everybody. That's right. Go to rootedlife.com, R-O-O-T-E-D-L-Y-F-E. And promo code GrowCast gets you 10% off your CBD just for listening to this show. And members of mygrowpass.com get 20% off their CBD. Are you confused about how to use CBD? Are you overwhelmed by the amount of product choices out there? Of course we are. Well, Rooted Life is here to help you. Their mission is to simplify your CBD experience. Why turn to Dr. Google for information when their team of cannabis-specialized advisory doctors oversee their vast educational program? Go to rootedlife.com to see their offerings of high-quality, third-party, lab-tested products that contain minimal ingredients as any wellness supplement should. So, go to rootedlife.com, L-Y-F-E. GrowCast is the promo code for 10%. MyGrowPass.com before we close if you want to save 20% off your high-quality CBD, everybody. All right, without further ado, let's jump in with Dr. Coco. Thank you all so much for listening. Enjoy the show. Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to GrowCast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Before we get started, please tell a friend about GrowCast. Tell a grower or smoker. And make sure to check out The Homegrown Helpers by Rob Smith for more growing talk. And my new show, The Coffee, Health, and Science Podcast. Having a lot of fun over there, people. Today we have Dr. Coco back on the line. What's up, Dr. Coco?
Hey, Jordan. It's a pleasure to come back on with you, as always.
So I got to ask right off the bat, how is CocoForCannabis.com? How is the Grow Challenge that just started at the time of this recording yesterday?
Yeah, no, the New Year's Grow Challenge is going off, man, at Coco for Cannabis. So we have about 400 growers. At last I checked last night, we had 390-something signed up for it. And we all germinated yesterday. We're still getting some late entrants. You know, this could drop or second week of January. If you still wanted to get into the NYGC, we're going to keep registration open until the 14th. So you can try to slide in and try to catch up. But yeah, we got about 200 growers have already started their journals. This is just the first day. And, you know, where we all drop seeds, a bunch of guys cut clones and girls and, we're growing together all at the same time. We got 8 different grower groups organized by different strains and breeders and things like that. So come by CocoForCannabis.com and check out the New Year's Grow Challenge, check out all those journals, see everybody growing together. It's really fun to see, you know, different media, different lights, different styles, all growing, you know, the same strains or similar strains, but all at the same time. Really gives you an interesting opportunity to compare different grows.
Yeah.
It's really cool. And everybody's so excited about it. And it's just a lot of fun to have a cool, supportive, collaborative community. They're not competitions. We don't do anything to really put people into competition with each other. We do have prizes. I gave away a bunch of t-shirts yesterday. I'm going to be giving away a Mars Hydro TS 1000 light here in a few days.
Nice. Sick.
But you know, it's all just about participation, about being part of a community, about helping each other out, about sort of supporting each other throughout the grow. So that's what we're all about at Coco for Cannabis. And that's why we do these grow challenges. And we got another one coming up, not too long into the future. It's time to start talking about the spring autoflower challenge. That's going to start on April 20th, and we're going to do that. Everybody's going to grow autoflowers. We're all going to drop our seeds on April 20th on 420, And it's going to be organized into different breeder groups. So we're going to have a Mephisto group. We're going to have a Dutch Passion, a Fast Buds group, a few other breeder groups, and then like a miscellaneous group for other growers. And yeah, I think that's going to be really exciting to grow auto flowers all at the same time and really see the differences, not only between the different breeders, but again, between different lights and media and styles and all of that.
Yeah. So, I hope to get in on that one myself, man. That would be cool. I'll try to be there for the 420.
We'd love to have you and the whole GrowCast audience join us in the Spring Auto Flower Challenge. So start setting your calendars up for that. Yeah. I'm going to hold you to that, Jordan. I really want you to participate.
If I have a living situation like I think I will have by then I'm all in, man.
Yep. Awesome.
Sounds great.
Yeah. So, you know, come by at this point, you can see what it's all about. If you're thinking about doing the Spring Auto Flower Challenge, if you want to come check out the New Year's Grow Challenge, see what the Cocoa for Cannabis community is all about. We got a cool forum, tons of grow journals. And we have a live chat room, where you can just log into the chat room and at this point there's, you know, about a dozen people in there 24 hours a day. So,
that's cool,
always
man.
A group of people that you can ask questions. And we give our members grower badges that they earn. So like in the chat room, you can see if somebody's a new grower, a practicing grower, a proven or, expert grower, and sort of understand who you're getting your advice from.
That's cool. So,
yeah, absolutely. Come by and check us out. We'd love to have you.
That's really cool, man. We appreciate it here. Always dropping by. You know, dropping knowledge, dropping science. We really love it. The listeners love it. And I am enjoying these FAQ kind of series that we're doing because we just kind of get to explore it piecemeal. You know what I mean? There's just random stuff that comes up. And I often find myself thinking about a bunch of my guests like, oh, you know, what would Mary Beth Sanchez think of this or whatever? And you're one of those people. What would Dr. Coco think of this? So we're going to continue this FAQ series. We are eventually going to get into diagnosing sick plants, as we discussed last episode, so you can still look forward to that, listener. But today, we're just going over a couple of points here, Dr. Coco. Let's just get to it. You ready to dive into these points?
I sure am.
So the first thing I wanted to run by you, we talked a lot about autos and photos last episode, but I wanted to focus more specifically on seeds versus clones. And any differences that you would like to highlight or extrapolate on?
Yeah, I think these are the sort of the different types of plants that we're growing these days, right? You have the division between the autos and the photos is sort of a choice you have to make. And then how are you going to propagate your plants? Are you growing them from seeds? Or are you growing them from clones?
Many of those forks in the road of growing. Are you going to grow organically or with bottled nutrients? Are you going to use LED or HID? Yep. That's a really good point. Yeah, lots of forks in the road
exactly.
There.
These are some of the decisions you sort of make going into it. You know, and sort of connecting to the topic about autoflowers and photoperiod plants. I mean, clones are pretty much always photoperiod plants.
Right, you can't clone an auto, just flower, right? Like a tiny little bud?
Right, well, that's a frequently asked question, though. I was just thinking, so I want to address that here. Like, people always ask, can you clone auto flowers? You can clone an auto flower, but an auto flower, from the time it's planted to the time it's going to be ready to harvest, it is pretty much set in stone by the genetics of the plant. And cloning it doesn't stop or reset that clock. So if you're thinking you got 10 weeks, if you're growing a 10-week autoflowering strain, if you grow that out to, you know, what? Probably the easiest way to take a clone is to grow a 6-node plant and top it.
Sure.
And then that top and clone it. So you're talking about probably taking your clone like around, you know, the third week of growth.
I see what you're saying. You can clone it. I see what you're saying. You technically could clone it and grow out that plant if you have a long enough flowering time.
But it's just going to be a tiny little plant. Yeah. So you're going to clone a plant that's already 3 or 4 weeks old. And by the time it gets roots, it's going to be 5 or 6 weeks old. And then it's going to be pretty much done with the growth phase, right? Because cannabis plants don't continue to do vegetative growth in the latter part of flowering.
Exactly, yeah.
Right. So this stretch period's already going to be over by the time this silly little plant has roots. And it's just going to be like flowering with whatever it's got, right?
Yeah, that's really interesting.
You can do that, but I mean, it's kind of pointless.
Yeah.
And that's really the reason that we don't. So it's not that there's some sort of biomechanical reason that they won't root or something like that. It's just that you don't have enough time. And with photoperiod plants, cloning, you know, you can do it perpetually. You can keep a plant in a vegetative state sort of perpetually and continue to remove clones off of it. And that's really the advantage of doing it that way.
Yeah, that's a good point. I never really appreciated as someone who was never into autos, I never appreciated the constant supply stream of seeds that you need to like keep that whole industry going. Like if autoflowers do expand and they become a big part of home growing and we get federal legalization, all this stuff, that's going to require a lot of seeds, man.
Yep. And that's a huge reason for seed companies and breeders to sort of want to transition into autoflowers.
Hell yeah.
And that's one of the reasons that we're going to move in that direction. I mean, we've had this experience with other agricultural seeds and seed breeding. Corn is sort of a famous case of this, that back in the 1920s, when they really started doing intensive research and corn breeding, we could have gone either in the direction of really breeding open pollinated varieties, in which case farmers would have been able to save their seeds, or we could have gone really heavily into the direction of hybridization, in which case farmers have to buy seeds every year. And you can imagine which one of those got more interest in research and development money.
Right.
Seed, right. So the direction that corn seeds developed was almost exclusively towards hybrid varieties of corn. And now all farmers, I mean, aside from some of the small scale farmers that I work with that are really growing land raised varieties of maize, all of farmers grow these hybrid varieties and they all have to buy seeds every year.
Wow.
And so that's an issue with autoflowers as well. That's sort of one of the reasons we're going in that direction.
So let me ask you this about turning the conversation back towards seeds versus clones specifically. I've heard that, you know, when you grow from seed, the potential for a genetic expression is slightly greater. I know it's like a sweeping statement, but I've just heard that before. Can you speak on that? And if whether or not you would call it so, that's true.
It's always going to be a little bit different. Yeah. No, seeds have a different kind of potential. Clones, you know, clones, you get some epigenetic drift, which means that the genetics of the plant actually do change very slightly through time. But with seeds, you're getting genetic recombination at every generation, especially with the parent lines that we're breeding with in cannabis. They're not homozygotic, so they recombine in different ways. Every seed is going to have a slightly different genetic expression. That offers potential. It also offers potential for sort of like not as good results.
Yeah, the other direction. Yeah, duds.
And that's one of the reasons that people like getting clones. Once they get one of these genetic expressions that's just, you know, amazing, then they want
to keep it.
And the only real way to keep that exact sort of genotype is to clone that plant. If you take seeds from it in sort of any of the various ways that we have to breed seeds, it's going to be slightly different than the parent genetic material. That's just sort of the reality of genetic recombination.
Yeah, that is really interesting. Can you speak on the kind of benefits I've found, the benefits and then obvious drawbacks to monocropping and having mother plants? It's really, really nice when you can dial in things like what the genetics prefer when it comes to feeding. If you've got a bunch of different plants, you really might end up with some that are finicky and some that are heavy feeders and some that are, you know, stout but don't need much. So that's really quite a benefit. Now, obviously, the drawback is everybody likes variety, right? You end up smoking the same strain, you'll get sick of it, you'll grow a tolerance to it, all this stuff. What do you think about all that?
So, you know, with nutrition, that sort of the first issue with how you're actually running the plants, nutrition's one of the things. There's sort of several things that make monocropping a little bit more effective in terms of the grow. And by monocropping, we're just meaning that you're growing all genetically identical
identical. Yeah, all the same strain, right?
So one of them is nutrients, and like you're saying that, you know, some plants prefer a slightly heavier blend and some plants prefer a slightly lighter blend. I run most of my plants at a light enough blend that's not going to bother even the sort of finickier ones. But that could be a bigger issue in a soil grow or even in a DWC situation where you're sort of
interesting.
Riding that line a little bit closer.
Sure.
In the bigger nutrient issue, I think that you run into when you run different plants is different timelines. And when you're going through the flowering stages, particularly if you have some plants that need a couple more weeks on, you know, late bloom blend, and you have other plants that need to start, you know, ripen blend or even start to flush or other things like that, it becomes sort of a bigger management issue, especially if you're on an automatic watering system.
Super, super good point. If you got multiple flowering times, one plant might be stretching or another one's already bulking and right. They might have totally different needs.
Autos do this too, man. If you're growing different auto flowering strains, the transition from sort of veg to flower on individual different plants might be different.
Oh, good point.
That's one of the advantages we have with photo periods because we flip them, right? And that sort of gets all the plants onto the same schedule. If you're running several different varieties of auto flowers, even if they're supposed to be all 10-week or all 12-week auto flowering strains or whatever, they're all going to transition to flowering at a slightly different time. And that's actually a fairly important nutrient change to line up with the plants.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
From vegetation to flowering newts. So if they're off by like a week, I mean, if you flip one plant a week early or another week, another plant a week late, they could actually show issues. You could get sort of symptoms as a result of that. That's actually one of the things I'll talk about with diagnosing plants symptoms is those issues that you see when the nutrient element ratio is incorrect as the plants start to transition. So those are issues that makes cloning better, right? It makes cloning sort of easier to manage. Other issues with cloning that are easier to manage are plant training. They all generally tend to grow about the same or stretch about the same or other things like that. And you know, if you're doing this in a perpetual situation, you can get really comfortable with your genetics and you can sort of really know what the plants are going to do at different stages and how long they're going to stay on early bloom and all of that. And you can really dial in your grow. But yeah, like you say, at the other side of that, the costs of running them or running in that kind of setup. I mean, for me, the biggest cost is the lack of variety, which you brought up. Like, and I think to some extent, this depends on who you're growing for. If you're trying to produce product for some sort of commercial operation, then you have a different set of expectations or goals than I do. I'm trying to create, you know, a bunch of different flavor jars that I can use for my own consumption. Primarily.
Consistency isn't anywhere close to the top of your priority list.
And volume and those kinds of things, right. Sort of like the consistent volume and being able to bank on certain things. And you can do a lot of that when you're growing clones. Like you can really predict what your yield is going to be per square meter in your grow space.
Yeah, that's a good point too. Planning ahead and projections and all of that. If you're trying to get down
budgeting.
To the, you know, yeah.
Exactly. And doing different sort of marginal analysis on, you know, what kind of strains to grow or other issues like that. It becomes a lot easier to manage certain aspects of like the business of it when you can really predict what you're going to get. And clones offer more predictability. You know, the thing, advantages to clones used to be much more significant than they are now. And I actually think that a lot of commercial growers are reevaluating some of that.
What makes you say that?
Growers are reevaluating that.
Like what has changed?
The legal regime has changed. So.
Oh, yes. Good point.
It used to be really difficult to get good genetics and seeds.
Now they're everywhere.
Well, you can order it online. I mean,
oh, you know, you don't even, you can order it through your Instagram app, man. A lot of these breeders are running their whole store through Instagram, and you can see exactly, see exactly what you're going to get. It's like really easy. Good point.
Try to do that in 1984, right? Like, I mean, in the 1980s or 90s or 70s or even into the 2000s, you know, getting seeds was just such a more difficult thing. So if you got good genetics, you held on to them. I mean, that was the whole sort of mindset and mentality of the cannabis community. And I think that mindset to a certain extent is anachronistic. It's sort of out of time now because that's changed.
Interesting.
The other aspect of clones that used to be really more advantage was just the genetics. I mean, it wasn't just hard to get seeds. It was hard to get good seeds.
Right.
I mean, you could get seeds in your bags of brickweed and stuff like that in the 80s, right? But like, you never knew what those genetics were. And, you know, since it became legal in certain parts of the world to really start doing cannabis breeding, and since they've been able to sort of create a business model around doing cannabis breeding and fund those efforts, they've made tremendous strides.
Yeah, 100%. All that refinement.
Yeah, and now seeds have some advantages over clones in terms of vigor. Sort of the basis of plant genetics, they go through different life phases. Even photoperiod plants go through different life phases. They're just so dominated by their photoperiodism that will sort of lock them into a vegetative stage.
Interesting.
But yeah, in the early growth phase of plants, they have more vigor. And especially hybrid seeds that are bred for heterosis display a lot of vigor, man. So we're getting seedlings. They used to say growing from clone would save you 2 weeks. And that really isn't the case anymore because the seeds have so much more vigor that even if you start with relatively decent clones, relatively decent sized cuttings, you know, it takes 10 days to 2 weeks to root them. And the little seedlings have damn near caught up in those 2 weeks.
Right.
That next week, the seedlings have more momentum. They have more vigor than the clones do. The clones are still kind of like sitting there in week three, and the seedlings grow right past them.
That's so interesting, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of, yeah, why don't you come by? This is going to drop around the time. So this episode is going to drop as the seedlings are trying to catch up with the clones in the New Year's Grow Challenge. I mean, we're doing this sort of live. We have a whole group of accomplished cloners in the clones group in the New Year's Grow Challenge. And they all cut cuttings last night or on the night of the 31st on New Year's Eve. And we all dropped seeds. So, you know, I was thinking the clones are going to be well out in the lead or look like they're well out in the lead for the first couple of weeks. And then the seedlings are going to come sort of rearing back and potentially take over. So it's a good sort of show of how those genetics has changed. The clones will have a hard time continuing to stay ahead of seedlings in terms of growth.
Well, it was interesting what you said before, because like you said, back in the day, it's like you can order seeds from some Dutch website and hope they come, or like, you know, get some ditchweed seeds. It's really not reliable. Then the step above that was being able to see pictures of the plant that you're about to buy. That's like, you know, that was a huge game changer. You can see what you're going to get. And then I would say, you know, give myself props here and other like media outlets. The next level to that is getting to know the breeders, listening to a breeder feature, finding out what the breeder's values are. And the reason why that's the next step is now there's so many good options. What do I pick? They all look great now. Before, you wanted to see a picture so you made sure it wasn't trash. Now there's so many great options. It's more like, well, which breeder do I identify with? And I think that's really cool.
Absolutely. And that's why we're doing the Spring Autoflower Challenge like that. I think the different breeders really do have different approaches, and it's going to be interesting to sort of see how the groups do.
Yeah, congregate. And yeah, like totally.
That. Yeah, put all the Mephistos in one group and see how they sort of compare to all the Dutch Passions and, you know, all the Fast Buds. And I think that's going to be interesting because we know some of the differences in terms of their breeding philosophies and how that actually translates into plants.
That's cool, man.
So yeah, you know, in Clones versus Seeds, I think that this is a reality. I mean, there's still clear arguments for both types of propagation styles. I think clones used to have a much more commanding advantage over seeds. And I think for that reason, they really came to dominate in sort of the commercial space. But I think that that may be changing, even though it requires purchasing seeds. And that was sort of one of the points that we got off on with sort of thinking about the autos or really running any kind of photoperiod. Plants require, you know, if you're growing from seeds, often requires purchasing those seeds.
That's an expense. And yeah, that's a good point.
It is, but it's a really kind of a small expense, especially if you think about from a commercial perspective. If you're running a commercial grow op, if you're paying, say, $15 a seed,
still going to get a mega return.
It's pennies compared to everything else you're paying to get that plant to harvest.
Right.
You know, the labor costs, the light costs, the nutrient costs, the media costs, the space.
That's a good point.
All of the rest of that. So I think that when you really step back and consider all of the fixed and variable costs that go into a grow, investing $10 or $15 per plant in genetics is really not a terrible expense, and it's certainly a justifiable expense if that produces any kind of benefit.
That's a good point. And I'll also say, to get a little bit more heady with it, getting off of the same monocropped clones strain and trying something new and trying something from seed, especially if you haven't been before, that's a great way to face new challenges and learn a new plant and learn its tendencies and become a better gardener and kind of expand your own knowledge, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if you're not trying new things at some point, you're not really learning new things, right? And that's part of the fun of being a gardener. I mean, I fall into that trap sometimes when I get too busy and I'm just like, okay, I'm going to put my grow on sort of autopilot here, and I'm falling back on the practices that I already know.
That's the case in life, man. That's the case in everything.
Right. And it's convenient to be able to do that. But then you start to think like it's not as much fun. And when you have time and when you have sort of the enthusiasm to put into the grow, yeah, I mean, you don't just want to be doing the same thing over and over again.
Yeah, that's a good point. Very, very poignant. And we only did 20 minutes on the question of seed versus clones. I love having you on the show, man.
Yeah, that moved through that one pretty quickly.
I kept you to a tight 20 minutes. I love it, man. All right, before we get back with Dr. Coco, we got a different doctor to tell you about today. Our partner, Dr. Zymes, everybody. You've heard of Dr. Zymes. Just go to drzymes.com, drzymes.com. Promo code GROWCAST10 gets you 10% off just for listening to the show. And mygrowpass.com members save 25% on their pest control, everybody. Dr. Zymes. The amazing Dr. Zymes Eliminator is a revolutionary green solution that kills and eliminates soft-bodied insects, molds, and mildews in your indoor and outdoor gardens. It's a proprietary formula. It is organic. It is all natural. It's OMRI listed. It leaves no residue. And it's truly one of the safest, most effective natural pesticides for your garden. If you're not using it, you should check it out immediately at drzymes.com. Make sure you follow the recommendations for optimum pest and fungal control, as pH and even water temperature is crucial for success with the all-natural, residue-free Dr. Zymes Eliminator. They've also got a great cleaner. So check it out today, drzymes.com. GrowCast10 for 10% off. mygrowpass.com. Get in before we close to save all the wonderful discounts, including 25% off your pest control, everybody. All right, let's get back to the show. I wanted to bring up CO2. This is something that's been on my radar a lot, and specifically, you know, whether or not it's necessary, how effective it is, because having talked to so many growers and seen a bunch of different posts, what interests me is so many people killing it who just don't use any sort of CO2 supplementation.
Yeah.
And then so many people killing it who not only use CO2 supplementation, but say they would never grow without it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So what do you think of that?
Well, I think you need to start, well, I don't know. I guess there's different places to start, but where I'd like to start is thinking about photosynthesis. Carbon dioxide is used in photosynthesis, and it can be a limiting factor for C3 plants like cannabis under really intense photosynthetic conditions. When they're receiving lots of light, then carbon dioxide concentrations may limit photosynthesis. In our grow situations, there's usually a high enough concentration of carbon dioxide for the intensity of light that we're running.
Interesting.
And so the limiting factor for our photosynthesis isn't the concentration of carbon dioxide. It's the quantity of photons that are hitting the plant. It's the photosynthetic potential, or the photosynthetic active radiation. And so that's sort of the first thing to think about. Carbon dioxide isn't going to help you really at all until it becomes the limiting factor.
Interesting.
So until the light intensity is high enough that light is no longer the limiting factor and carbon dioxide concentrations are.
Where would that threshold exist?
Most of us. What's that?
Where would that threshold exist?
You know what? I would want to chat more with my partner. This is really Dr. Photon's area of specialty.
Get him on the line.
In order
let's Skype him. Let's Skype him in. No, that's no problem. Yeah.
Yeah. No. I mean, I could take some guesstimates that you'd probably start benefiting from carbon dioxide above like 1,000 or 1,200 par. But yeah, I want to hedge heavily on that I'd like to consult with him first in terms of PPM concentrations.
No, totally. I get it. Yeah.
For carbon dioxide.
But still,
well,
the principle stands. I totally understand what you mean by which factor is limiting. May I interject and ask how VPD might play into this?
That's an interesting thought. VPD is really more so. VPD affects the flow of water and nutrients through the plants. If you're running high heat, usually, so see the situation here that happens is you have a high light intensity. Oftentimes, this exists in a hid grow where you're really sort of putting a lot of HPS lights or a lot of CMH lights on your plants, giving them a lot of intensity, but also a lot of heat. They can manage that heat better if they're able to keep up with sort of their photosynthetics. And they're able to do more photosynthesis at a higher heat level. So those are sort of the qualifying conditions for supplementing with carbon dioxide.
Interesting.
Is running high light intensity that often generates high heat. It's not even so much that the high heat provokes the carbon dioxide. It's just that with more carbon dioxide, the plants can manage a higher heat when they're sort of engaged.
Exactly. Well, that kind of does point to my question, which is, you know, could someone's environment, whether it's their, you know, temperature, humidity, VPD, whatever it is, could the environmental factors create an environment in which the CO2, you know, has benefits or rather mitigates detriments?
The bigger issue to really think about, this is all sort of related, but what happens, I mean, the reason all of these factors sort of go together is because in order to increase the concentration of carbon dioxide in a space, it's important to stop air exchange. And so you need to seal that space. Otherwise, you're just sort of like creating pollution in a sense, like you're creating carbon dioxide and you're venting it out of your tent with an exhaust system.
I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah. If you're conditioning your air, it's pointless to then vacuum the air out of the room. So you got to be aware of that.
Right. And so now you've sealed your grow space, which means that there's nowhere for the heat to go. You're not exhausting the heat in the same way that we typically would in an open grow where we have an exhaust fan running through there. Some people still run air-cooled hoods where they're cooling the air through the light without affecting the air in the tent.
Good point.
Right?
Yep.
But they're still running higher temperatures in that tent. They're supplementing with carbon dioxide. They're running really intense light, which allows higher temperatures, but they're also having to use air conditioning. to cool the tent to the extent that they need to cool the tent.
Right.
So they want to be able to run a higher temperature so you don't have to cool it as much. Right. And that's fine. If you're really going for sort of maximum yield per space, you can run high intensity lights, seal up your space. Once you seal up the space, you've got to cool the space with air conditioning. You're going to have to dehumidify the space with a dehumidifier, and you're going to have to supplement the air with carbon dioxide because there's not going to be air exchange sort of supplementing the air with carbon dioxide. You know, for most of us, that's sort of beyond, for most of my audience at least, I think that that's beyond their desires in terms of growing and beyond their means in a lot of cases. Right. And growers set up instead with a vented tent. They have an exhaust fan, they have intake, they're moving lots of air through their tent.
Yeah, many growers, including myself, would say that's really important, that ventilation, right, in our particular setups.
In most home growers that we're talking to, it is really important. And my point is, if that's your style of grow, adding carbon dioxide is doing nothing.
Good point.
I mean, it's doing absolutely nothing because you're not being, almost certainly, you're not being limited by carbon dioxide. You're being limited by light within the grow space. So even if you were increasing the concentration, it wouldn't really be helpful for photosynthesis.
Man, that's interesting.
And the other side of that is, you're venting it all like immediately and pulling in fresh air from outside.
So you're shooting yourself in the foot, defeating the purpose.
Yeah, you're not even increasing the concentration within right. the space.
Right. Yeah, this is a much more damning picture that you painted than I thought. I thought it would be more balanced. But what you're saying is it might be useful in certain situations. But the fact
it is useful in a sealed space. I mean, and I think that that's really the there's a couple, like all of those things, air conditioning, dehumidification, and carbon dioxide supplementation are all only really useful if you seal up the grow space. If you're running an exhaust system through there, then you might be talking about using like buffering rooms where you're going to draw air from like a cooler space or something and use an air conditioner in there, or use dehumidification or any of these things. But all of that is really about a sealed space and a different style of growing, where instead of just sort of like growing the plants in the air that you and I are breathing, we're creating really specific air. You know, you're creating your own climate. So you're creating the humidity level using dehumidification. You're creating the temperature using an air conditioner, and the lights usually provide the heat. And you're creating the carbon dioxide concentration with supplementation. And you're sort of doing all of those things manually, or you're not.
Right.
But it doesn't make sense to start introducing those elements that are really appropriate for a sealed space into a vented space.
Yeah, that's well put. That's really well put. And I've found when it comes to a lot of the time, when it comes to, you know, proper environmental control, it really comes down to insulation and how your ventilation is set up. That really seems to be the case in those vented spaces that you mentioned.
Yeah, no, there's so much you can do with, if you're in a ventilated space, and that's how I think, you know, most home growers, is if you're growing for your own needs and, you know, you live in a reasonable climate. I mean, one of the reasons to set up a sealed space is because you live in a jungle.
Right. And, yeah, good point.
You know, it's really hot and humid, and it's the only way that you're going to be able to control the climate for the plants. But if you're in, you know, a reasonable temperate climate, you can set up a vented grow space. And most growers should be able to manage their climate without using things like dehumidifiers or air conditioners or heaters and stuff like that directly for their plants, especially dehumidification or humidifiers. If you live in a dry space, then you can don't vent all of your humidity or don't vent it all outdoors. Most of the humidity that we have to worry about actually comes from the plants. The plants are exceptionally effective humidifier.
Right. That makes sense.
So you know, one thing to possibly consider, in my space, I live in a really dry climate, so I don't vent my exhaust outdoors. I vent it into the room that the exhaust is drawn from. That room has a lot of air exchange with, you know, the outside and the rest of the house, but the room has a higher relative humidity than the rest of the house because it's sort of taking all of that exhaust air from the tent. And that keeps the inflow air into the tent at a higher relative humidity.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of growers in a similar climate to mine are venting their all their exhaust straight outdoors, and then they're adding a humidifier, which is, you know, more expensive and
that's interesting. Equipment.
Yeah. So to think about that, if you have big humidity problems, then you have to vent outdoors and, you know, think about where you're drawing your inflow air from and things like that.
Yeah.
But oftentimes we can sort of resolve these climate issues without having to resort to an air conditioner or dehumidifier.
Love it, man. And just to go back to the CO2 thing and kind of cap it off with my personal thoughts, yeah, all the studies aside, all the science aside and photosynthesis and all this, just to get to a more like emotional, less logical, I don't like CO2 supplementation for the same weird reason I don't like sulfur burning. I don't like messing with the gases in my space, like some sort of weird irrational fear of suffocation or something. Or I know that, you know, sulfur is flammable, yeah, and like I just don't, well, I don't like the idea of it.
It's not carbon monoxide, which would be really problematic. But yeah, you know, I agree. No,
I know it's irrational, but
talk about carbon dioxide. Usually, it's because it's a greenhouse gas, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's where it usually comes up in conversation. Yeah.
Right. So you're creating greenhouse gases and then venting them into, you know, the atmosphere or whatever, straight out of your
exhaust. It just doesn't feel right to me.
Right. Yeah.
It's a bad explanation, but it's true.
I feel where you're coming from with that, though. And I sort of agree. We're breathing this air too, right? So, yeah.
It's just weird. Yeah, so there you go. There's my thoughts on that particular
thing. I just think for so many growers, I mean, a lot of growers are looking for ways that they can sort of, you know, step up the quality of their grow or increase the quantity of their harvests or other things like that. And that brings them to places like carbon dioxide supplementation. Even though I don't think carbon dioxide supplementation is going to necessarily help, it also leads them into doing other kinds of things. And I think it's really better to focus on, you know, the basic horticultural practices and really dialing in things like air to water ratio, levels of nutrition, electrical conductivity, or your nutrient element ratios or your air to water ratios. Think about maintaining, you know, the consistent climate. Those kinds of things are all going to help you out probably much more than adding carbon
dioxide. That's well said. And I also think that you just called CO2 supplementation a gateway drug. It leads you to trying other things. Next thing you know, you're putting Kool-Aid in your reservoir. I've seen it.
Yeah.
They're looking for a secret weapon.
Yeah, I think there's a whole sort of suite of practices that are out there. Some of them have, you know, their roots grounded in science. Others really don't. But a lot of them are being misapplied, I think, in the cannabis community by growers that are looking for, you know, increases in quality, increases in yield, and other things like that. And so, yeah, I think that stepping back and thinking about, you know, how does this align with, or is it out of alignment with, sort of basic principles from botany and horticulture? And is this something that's actually going to be helpful in these different cases? And with carbon dioxide, it, when you get into sort of the science of photosynthesis, it becomes really clear that it's not going to help most home growers that are trying to think about using it to sort of help their grow.
Love it, man. Well said. Well said. Before we wrap here, I want to tease what we're going to talk about next time. I know it's going to go long, so we're going to make it its own episode. But I just want to talk about, you know, the general principles we should have in mind when we're looking at diagnosing sick plants. I know it depends on medium, and I bet we're going to hear a lot about coco and the incredible ability to apply and flush nutrients from a medium like coco. But don't let me put words in your mouth. Talk to me about how we're going to be exploring the idea of diagnosing plants.
Yeah, no. So I think, you know, diagnosing plants, I have sort of the privilege of getting to do a lot of this work. And I'll put a little plug in for my chat room here. If you have plants that need diagnosis, I think that our chat room is the best place on the internet to go. You know, like That's I awesome. Said at the beginning of the show, there's usually, you know, a dozen or so growers in there at this point, and they're all interested in helping you.
Well, and it's good that you have the badge system, you know, because like if they go to a Facebook group, you're going to get a ton of answers. You're going to get too many answers, and they're going to all be different, and half of them are going to be dubious.
And we have, so we have grower badges that'll tell you, okay, this person's an expert grower, this person's a proven grower, and we have a little key you can look up. I personally assign those badges upon request to growers based on their experience and their journaling and the you know, what I've seen from their grows. And so you get some of that, but it's just the live, direct, instantaneous feedback and the interaction where, you know, you can post your picture and then they'll have questions for you. It's not just like an answer. So that dynamic back and forth process really allows us to get to a better diagnosis than just having somebody sort of post everything they think is relevant and then have five different people offer their hypotheses. There, the sort of the back and forth, right, allows us to get through some things much more effectively.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, if this is your issue, come by. But I have a lot, you know, a lot of people do come to the chat room and I get a lot of experience in sort of how to approach these problems. Most people that have a problem with their plant are trying to diagnose the symptoms. And I think it's more important to sort of diagnose the cause rather than to diagnose the effect. You know, especially if you think you have some sort of nutrient issue, trying to determine if you have like iron deficiency or, you know, molybdenum deficiency or you know, some other issue like that.
Manganese or something.
Yeah, manganese. And, you know, there's some exceptions. Calcium and magnesium show certain symptoms and they're actually often treated in a different way than other nutrient issues. But for most of those things, it's not important to figure out what specific micronutrient is missing or is having trouble with in uptake. What's important to diagnose is why. So we need to consider the reasons the plant is having trouble, not necessarily what exactly the trouble is.
Sure.
So I think a lot of growers try to overdiagnose their plants as having sort of one of those specific issues.
Oh, but I have a copper deficiency. I know it. I've seen the pictures online.
Right. And then, so what the hell are you going to do with that? Try to give it more copper?
Yeah, toss some pennies in the soil.
That's the other thing, is most of the time that plants have deficiencies, it's not because of an underdose. I mean, especially not if you're using cannabis fertilizer products.
So true. They're loaded with, exactly.
It's not because it's not there. So that's the next thing. Once you sort of figure out, okay, even if it is a nutrient deficiency, even if you've diagnosed it perfectly as copper deficiency, you still have to figure out, why am I having copper deficiency? Right. So before you even got to the copper point, you can get to this like, okay, I'm having some sort of deficiency. Why am I having a deficiency? Right? You don't even need to sort of get to what specific thing it is. And I think there's five basic categories of things you should try to consider when you're diagnosing plants.
Ooh, I like that. That's a good tease. So, two are jumping to mind.
We'll talk about climate. Climate can cause all sorts of different issues. If it's, you know, too hot, too cold, not the right relative humidity, those kinds of issues. Light. You can get usually from too much light if growers let their flowering plants sort of get too close to the light. But there's also some symptoms from not providing enough light that sometimes growers are stretching during the seedling stage in particular. Pests. You know, there's a lot of pests that bother cannabis plants. And at a really basic level, it's important to understand if the symptoms you're looking at are caused by some sort of nutrient issue or if they're being caused by some sort of pest.
That's a good point, because a lot of them can actually resemble and are like insidious. Yep. Like I know, for instance, some microscopic pests that you wouldn't even be able to see on the bottoms of the leaves, for instance, like a broad mites can cause your plants to twist and curl early signs, much like an iron deficiency would.
Absolutely. And so that is important, right? When you get those kind of leaves, they're twisting, curling leaves, you have to be able to, it's more important to know, is this a pest or is this a nutrient, than what specific pest or sort of what specific nutrient issue it is,
right? Good point.
In terms of how you're going to approach this. So yeah, pest is a big one. And there are definitely a lot of pest symptoms that look similar to deficiency symptoms. Fungus gnats are often misdiagnosed as a nutrient issue as well. Spider mites can even be misdiagnosed as calcium deficiency early on. So sort of being able to make that level of diagnosis is really important. There's some issues that happen with roots. And I'll do a common one here that we can talk about, which is people show up with plants that clearly exhibit signs of dwarfism. Have you ever seen that?
Where just stunted growth?
They're growing, but everything's tiny and miniaturized.
Yeah, I have seen that 100%.
And it's like the nodes are really straight. The leaves are like tiny, and it's like it's just become miniaturized, the plant. Right?
Yeah.
That is root damage.
Ah.
So that's a pretty easy one to diagnose, actually. That's almost 100% root damage. So root stunting is an issue that can happen. Sometimes that's caused by sort of sloppy transplanting. Other times the root damage can just be caused by fertilizers, by hop fertilization, either in soil or sort of fertigation where the EC got too hot.
Interesting.
So root issues are also sort of what's popularly called overwatering, or underwatering. What's interesting is overwatering isn't actually a thing in terms of plant health. The thing is
suffocation,
under-oxygenating.
Sure.
Yeah. Suffocation. So we basically have roots need both air and water.
That's an important distinction. I like that.
Well, if overwatering was a thing, DWC wouldn't be possible.
Good point. Good point.
I mean, that's like all water. I mean, if it was if the problem was too much water, then yeah, that wouldn't be possible. The problem that we call overwatering, and it's really unique to soil grows, the problem that we call overwatering is because the roots don't have oxygen. So it's root suffocation. It's not because they have too much water. It's because they have not enough oxygen. Roots need both water and oxygen. So you got to be able to diagnose those issues. And then there's nutrient issues, right? So the five things: climate, light, pests, roots, and nutrients. And being able to sort of figure out which of those five things are concern is like step number one in your diagnosis. The next episode, I think we'll be able to get deeper into sort of how you approach each of those. How do you identify specifically which one of those things might be the problem? And then, you know, the appropriate remedies for the different sort of issues.
Love it, man. Love it. Dr. Coco and GrowCast back in action. I am absolutely thrilled.
Back in action 2020, huh, Jordan? Yeah,
yeah, man. That's what I'm saying.
Wish you a happy new decade at the top of the show here.
Yeah, yeah. And seriously, everything that you've done for Coco for Cannabis, everything that all of the GrowCast members we've sent your way, all the great hours now of episodes that you've done for us, like, congratulations and thank you, man. This has been a wonderful collaboration.
Absolutely, Jordan. And thank you. You know, I really appreciate, you know, having your platform and being able to talk to your audience and share a lot of this knowledge and these ideas and thoughts. And it's been a really sort of thought-provoking experience for me as well. So I really enjoy coming on.
My pleasure, man. It's a good combo. Everybody out there, stay tuned for more Dr. Coco shortly. CocoForCannabis.com. Let's do Instagrams. Anything you want to give out as far as social?
Yeah, I am Dr. MJ Coco all across social media. So Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Check me out. Follow us on at Dr. MJ Coco. Come by CocoForCannabis.com and, you know, check out the live chat room. It's CocoForCannabis.com/chat. come to our community, our forum, and, you know, check out all these grow journals. I mean, it's so cool to see, you know, 200, by the time this airs, we'll probably have over 200 growers that have journals that all started growing on the same day. And we have soil growers, we have DWC, we have hydro growers, we have tons of cocoa growers, we have all sorts of different lights and setups and levels of experience. And it's just fascinating to see everybody's different sort of grows in action. So lots to learn, lots to sort of engage with there. And I'd love to have your audience come by and check it out.
Hell,
and then,
yes.
You know, if you're interested in that kind of thing, start getting your grow calendars lined up to grow along with Jordan and I in the Jordan and me in the Spring Autoflower Challenge, which starts on April 20th, 4/20.
I look forward to it, man. Everybody, check out everything Dr. Coco's going on. Check out GrowCast on Instagram at GrowCast. Follow me at Jordan River IG. You can message me directly if you'd like to get at me there. This is Dr. Coco and Jordan River wishing you the best of luck in your grows and saying to you all, be safe out there, everybody, and grow smarter.
Grower love, everyone.
That is our show, everybody. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I loved talking to Dr. Coco, and I look forward to having him on again soon and repeatedly in the future. Make sure to check out CocoForCannabis.com, of course, and all the grow challenges. Check out our merch page, GrowCastPodcast.com. Click merch. Shout out to Jay Blank for doing the beat for the ads, SoundCloud.com/Jay Blank. And finally, for all your consulting needs, Start2Finish710 on Instagram. That's Start2Finish710 for all your consultation needs. Thank you all so much for tuning in. I really, really appreciate you guys listening and sharing the show. I hope you're doing amazing things in your garden, people. I hope you got some sticky, stinky, terpy buds going. All right, we'll see you next time on GrowCast, everyone. Bye-bye.